What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to The Exchange. Here's today's show.
Courtney, thank you very much, and welcome everybody to The Exchange. I'm Tyler Matheson, in for Kelly Evans. She'll be back in a couple of weeks. Here's what's ahead. A GDP surprise, and not a good one. The economy slowing, but inflation stubborn. We're hearing the word stagflation. Yields are spiking, stocks are sinking, but two of our guests says it's not as bad as it seems. They're here to tell us why and where they're seeing opportunity in today's market. Plus, Meta down big amid weak revenue guidance and big AI spending plans. So did that report just set the tone for Alphabet? We'll talk about that and look at the names that are set to benefit from Meta's AI CapEx commitment. And there's one stock defying the sell-off today. You're looking at it up 6% right now, up 600% in a year. Yesterday, one of our guests called it a top pick, so we invited the CEO to join us. And he will, for an exclusive interview just ahead. But we begin with today's markets and the not-so-pleasant numbers and Dom Chu.
Not so pleasant, Tyler, but a lot more pleasant than they were just about a couple of hours ago. So take a look right now at the market state of play. What we are seeing right now is the Dow Industrial is down about 1.25% off about 457 points. The broader S&P 500 now back above the 5,000 mark. It was below that level earlier this morning. We're off about 0.75%. And the Nasdaq Composite, that tech trade, the epicenter of today's downside, is down about 1%. The Nasdaq Composite, 15,432. 542, rather, down 170 points. Now, to give you some perspective, at the lows of the session, the Nasdaq Composite was down almost 2.3-some percent. Now it's only down 1%, so quite a bit of at least dip buying for the time being. We'll see if that carries through. Let's take you to that epicenter trade, mega cap technology, those so-called Magnificent Seven type stocks. The only one in the green so far today is NVIDIA. So AI, perhaps still in vogue a little bit. It's up 0.25%. Meanwhile, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, all down roughly 2-3% or so. And remember, Alphabet and Microsoft report earnings after today's closing bell. The epicenter stock of the day has to be Meta Platforms, part of that Magnificent Seven trade. You can see they're still down about 11%. It was down way more than that, 14-15% just a few hours ago. Meta Platforms on the heels of that disappointing outlook and its AI spending on capital expenditures weighing on those shares. But it is not all fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Tyler, take a look at these names. You put up a mystery chart, but check out Newmont Corp, Chipotle, and Union Pacific, all on the heels of earnings reports, more positive in nature. Newmont on that gold trade, Chipotle, Union Pacific on the transport side of things, in the green in an otherwise down tape. Tyler, some at least positivity to end things on. I'll send things back over to you.
And we're grateful to you for that, Dom. Thanks very much. All right, yields on the move as well on the back of that GDP report, with the 2 and the 10-year hitting 5-month highs. For that, let's check in with Rick Santelli. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Tyler. Indeed, warmer inflation, cooler growth. Listen, I could weigh in on these numbers and give you personal opinions on where I think inflation's going to be or growth's going to go. But I like to keep it simple. The numbers today were disappointing on growth, and they were warm on inflation, period. 1.6 is not 2.5% as we expected, and it's less than half our last look at 3.4. Consumption was on the weak side. The price index jumped from 1.6 to 3.1. What everyone was talking about was the core PCE price index embedded in this GDP report, a quarter-over-quarter metric that jumped from 2% to 3.7, 3/10 hotter than expectations, 1.7% hotter than the rearview mirror. It's hard to ignore those types of numbers. Now, if you look at an intraday of two-year note yields, you can clearly see they jumped on the number. They moved all the way up to 5.02, the high yield. But do keep in mind, we've had a handful of violations of 5% on an intraday basis, but we have yet to close above 5%. So we really want to watch that, especially if you're a technician. That same level would equate to 4.67 in the tens, and it certainly looks like we're going to close above that. Closing yields are the most important technically. It's like a roller coaster. You can go up and down, but it's where you get on and where you get off that counts. And finally, a year-to-date of two-year note yields clearly shows you what I'm talking about. We've been nudging against the 5% on a closing basis, haven't quite arrived at that spot yet. Tyler?
Interesting metaphor. Agree with you. It's where you start and finish. It really matters. Rick, thank you very much. All righty. Yields spiking, sending the rate on the 30-year mortgage higher, too. And Diana Olick has the move. Hi, Di.
Hey, Ty. Yeah, the average rate on the 30-year fix took a big leap after that inflation data this morning. 7.52% is the new rate, according to Mortgage News Daily. That's the highest since early November. April has been ugly, to say the least. At the end of March, we were at 6.91%. All right, so what does that mean for buyers out in the spring market today? Say you're buying a $400,000 home right around the national median. Your monthly payment today is $128 more than it was just 1 month ago. That's if you have solid credit and are getting the average rate. Even with small rate moves, some people on the margins will now no longer qualify for that mortgage. Now, consumers were clearly worried about rates that they would go higher. We saw it in the pending home sales data out this morning for March. Rates were mixed in March, both below and above 7%, but not this high. We saw sales pop over 3% higher, which was unexpected, and it may be because buyers wanted to get in before rates went higher. Smart move. We are now seeing a larger share of home buyers apply for adjustable rate mortgages, which offer lower rates and can be fixed for up to 10 years, still considered riskier loans, though. Home builder stocks, they had been rallying earlier this week on solid earnings from PulteGroup and D.R. Horton last week. Not so much today. Tyler?
How much do rising rates help the home builders in the sense that they have maybe more flexibility to come in with inducements, incentives for buyers?
Well, it's a difference of how much does it help the builders or how much does it help their stocks. The stocks don't like it, but the builders themselves, you're right, they have the ability to buy down mortgage rates, and they're doing it on an average to about 5.75%. That's what we heard from both D.R. Horton and Pulte, was that that incentive was really getting buyers in the door, and they reported much stronger than expected earnings, and they said they were seeing more traffic, although a tiny bit slow at the beginning of April. So the builders, it puts them in a sweet spot, especially since there's so little existing supply.
Diana, thank you very much. Diana Olick reporting. All right, weaker than expected GDP data, hotter than expected inflation, raising concerns about economic growth and potentially stagflation. But two of our next guests say the economy's not as bad as these headline numbers suggest. Joining us now are Greg Dacko, chief economist at EY Parthenon, and Emily Rowland, co-chief investment strategist at John Hancock Investment Management, and CNBC senior economics reporter Steve Leisman with us as well. Steve, let me begin with you. How surprised were you that GDP growth came in only at 1.6%, down from 3.4? People thought it might slow up, but maybe not that much.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise in terms of how much it slowed. But when you dig a little deeper, Tyler, you don't really see the weakness that everybody is afraid of. In fact, you may be getting just the weakness that you wanted if you were hoping for a soft landing. When you look at the GDP, you see that consumer spending did slow a bit. You see that there was actually a decent pop back in business spending. That was a good number there. But then look at what happened with inventories and trades. Add those two bottom numbers on the left together. It took off 1.1 percentage points. Certainly, it was a big surprise on the inventories. I will tell you, Tyler, an economist I spoke with this morning actually raised his second quarter forecast because he expected this inventory build in the first quarter. Well, he said we'll probably get it in the second quarter. Now we've had two negatives in a row. So that's not the problem. I wouldn't be trading this market down based upon the weak economic growth numbers. What I would be concerned about are the inflation numbers. That's where the big surprise is. And tomorrow, Tyler, is a big morning where we're going to get the March PCE report. And the big question is going to be, was the overshoot in inflation in March or was it from upward revisions to January and February? That's going to be a big question for 8:30 tomorrow morning.
All right, let's move on now because Steve just mentioned it, Greg. I want to get your take on inflation here because I'm having a little bit of a hard time parsing out what you think compared with the numbers. The numbers were sort of, I guess, quarter over quarter higher than people expected. But you don't seem to think that inflation was as bad as those numbers seem to suggest.
Yeah, I certainly think that the stagflation narrative that's going around right now is completely misled. We still have an economy that is quite robust. So there is growth in the pipeline. So no growth is not really the question. With regards to inflation, I think Steve highlighted the key factor that we have to look at in tomorrow's data, where we'll get the monthly data in terms of inflation. We'll have to see how much of that extra pop in the PCE data in the first quarter was due to higher numbers in January and February. Let's not forget, January and February data was extremely noisy. I think there was very little signal in that data. We had some reset effects for internet prices, for healthcare prices, for utilities prices. And then we had a pop in the financial services fees, which is a reflection of a very strong stock market in the first quarter. Those are not the types of inflationary concerns that I would have. So we'll see how strong the March month-over-month print is for PCE inflation. I still think that based on first principles of an economy that is gently cooling, of more pricing sensitivity and less pricing power, that we'll get more disinflation over the coming months. And I'm not excessively concerned about the pop that we saw in the first quarter.
So let me understand here. My notes from you say on the inflation front, price pressures eased modestly in Q1, with headline inflation cooling year over year to 2.6%. That's not the headline number that everybody's talking about today. What's the difference?
That is what happens when you look at data through different angles. The pop that we saw in terms of the quarter over quarter annualized reading of 3.4% in the first quarter is essentially just that. Quarter over quarter, we did see an acceleration in inflation. But if you look at the longer term trend, we're still on this disinflation trajectory. You have headline PCE that is hovering around 2.5%, 2.6% in the first quarter, year over year, relative to what prices were last year. And you have core inflation that eased to 2.9%. Both are record lows since Q1 of 2021. That's a critical point because that's the point at which inflation took a turn for the worse. We're now getting back to those more sustainable levels, closer to the Fed's 2% inflation target.
Emily, let me get you to jump in here. It says in my notes, stocks from you, stocks are likely selling off because of the inflation element of the GDP report. Certainly smelled of stagflation with weaker growth and hotter inflation. That's exactly the opposite, it seems to me, of what Greg is saying.
Yeah, and I think Greg makes a great point. There is a twist to the story around stagflation. In addition to what Greg mentioned, I'd also point to initial jobless claims this morning coming in at 207,000. We look at an unemployment rate that remains below 4% today. So the labor market's incredibly strong right now. I think the markets are really spooked by this idea that it's taking a long time to get back down to the Fed's 2% inflation target here. From a market perspective, we are seeing a potential rotation play out right now into more cyclical areas of the market, energy stocks, value stocks that really were not caught up in that Fed pivot momentum trade that resulted in massive multiple expansion, particularly on the technology side. So I think investors should consider leaning into those areas of the market because it does look like we're in a period where the path to inflation here is pretty bumpy in terms of getting it back down.
Is the market, Emily, overreacting to these numbers?
Potentially. First of all, you know, when you get GDP reports, they don't usually move markets this much. It's a month-old report. It's heavily subject to revisions, and we'll find out what those are later. But I think markets are ultra sensitive to the inflation backdrop today. So as the day's gone on and economists, great economists like Greg and others have really dug into the numbers, it turns out that growth really isn't all that bad. I think the challenge now is how the market's going to digest this new environment where cuts are being taken out. And that's really the challenge. As bonds go up, yields, stocks fall, those correlations increase. Where are investors to turn in this difficult macro backdrop?
You know, so Steve, tie this all up for us. If you would make a little bit of a reference to consumer spending, 2.5%, which was slower than previous quarter.
Yeah.
But also the idea of where this puts the Fed, because on the one hand, you have a maybe slower than anticipated economy, which would argue for maybe more a stimulative approach on the part of the Fed. And on the other hand, you have potentially, though Greg kind of disputes this a bit, a potentially higher inflation number, which would say you got to stay higher for longer.
Yeah. So, Tyler, I brought along a chart. Guys in the back, we have a chart on real domestic final purchases that should sort of ease concerns about the growth number. What this number does is it takes out, there it is. Now, it's really hard to see in that right-hand most number bar there a dramatic slowing of the economy. What you see there is an easing really from two quarters before it that were the hot numbers that were much more than expected. This, without those two hot numbers, would be a pretty good result. So I think you look at that and that should ease your concern. That looks at the core of the economy, the business spending side and the consumer spending side. They're okay. And in fact, I would not be surprised or displeased to see them cool even a little bit more to get down and relieve some inflationary pressure that could potentially happen in the economy. As for the Fed, very quickly, I think the story is that they're going to wait and watch this. They're going to be very interested in how these numbers, as Greg said, parse out tomorrow. Do we have a January, February inflation problem, or is this also a March problem? That's something the Fed's going to want to see. But I think right now they're pretty firmly dug in with this idea that they have the right rate to bring inflation down, which means I don't think they feel as a committee they need to go higher here. So what this means is higher for longer. And it means that rate cuts are probably into the fall at this point. There's still a July possibility if we get some really good numbers. And Greg is right that we really had a lot of noise at the beginning of the year. But I would say that's a shrinking possibility. It's higher for longer. It's later rate cuts. But I think cuts are still a possibility here if what we're seeing is a lot of noise at the beginning of the year.
Greg, I'm going to give you the last word.
Yeah, I think Steve is absolutely right. We have to look at the underlying pace of growth. That still shows a relatively robust economy. Emily pointed out the fact that the labor market is the key pillar of economic activity. That's still sustained. But we are seeing evidence that we're still moving in the right direction in terms of disinflation. Policymakers will be much more cautious than we are as economists because they're working on a data-dependent policy play-by-play type of approach, which is a risky proposition in this environment. But they are likely to err on the side of caution and delay rate cuts until they are very sure that inflation is not about to reaccelerate. I don't think it will, but Fed policymakers will likely want to be a little bit
more cautious. Great and substantive conversation. Thank you very much, Greg Dacko, Emily Rowland, Steve Leisman. Appreciate it. All right, coming up, our next guest says he didn't get what he expected from Meta's earnings, but he's still a buyer. Tell us why and where he expects the stock to go from here. Plus, there's one AI stock that is up more than 600% over the past year. And no, it is not NVIDIA or Supermicro. We will reveal the under-the-radar name that's powering higher despite the sell-off. We mentioned it yesterday. That's your big hint. And before we head to the break, let's take a look at Rubrik. Shares up 21% in, or maybe it's Rubrik, I don't know. Up 21% in its public debut, trading just slightly above the opening price of $38.60. We'll be right back.
This is The Exchange on CNBC.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Dow down 450 and basically stable at that level, at least for the time being. Meantime, Meta beat on the top and bottom lines this morning. That's good. But with shares down more than 10%, something has investors worried. And we kind of know what it is. Our next guest held his buy rating on the stock, but says today's report was a bad recipe for Meta. Joining us now, Rob Sanderson, Managing Director at Loop Capital. Rob, always good to see you. Thank you for being with us today. What was the nit to pick in Meta's report today?
It's the commentary on spending outlook. A rare move for Meta to raise their operating expense guidance. They brought the low end up and they're spending plan to spend another $3 to $5 billion in capex, incremental to what they had guided the street earlier. So there's a big spending cycle. You know, this is not a new message per se. You know, they've been talking about elevated spending levels for some time. The difference is that you know, the company was putting up material upside and raising guidance the past several quarters, and the bad recipe is higher expenses on only an inline result, and that's the correction that we're seeing in the stock today.
Should this is kind of a theoretical question? Should or shouldn't the market look at this as a vote of confidence in what Meta is pursuing and doing, and something that in the long term is going to pay big dividends for the company, even if in the short term it means that it calls into question profitability forecasts for the next 4 or 5 quarters?
Yeah, well, that would certainly be the bullish lens for long-term investors to look through. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, the company's you know, spending about one quarter of their profits on Reality Labs and this vision to build up the metaverse. So that's not a message that has been too favorable with investors. No. And here we have another, you know, potentially large, you know, spending category that really is theoretical, has a lot of excitement and a lot of promise, but there's not a lot of, you know, ROI or ways to justify, you know, at this point, what this might look like over time.
When you look at, let's set aside these very pointed and seemingly reasonable concerns about Meta, and you look at the current operating business, how do you evaluate that and their advertising and the fact that they seem to be not a stealth winner, but certainly a big player in the world of AI?
Yeah, the core business is very impressive, Tyler. I mean, to grow 27% at mm-hmm. at the levels of advertising revenue that they're doing is really unprecedented. You know, Google was growing at about, you know, half this rate or so when they were at comparable levels of scale. So it's very impressive. They've done a fantastic job of utilizing technology, and AI is a big part of the story as to how they're getting better content ranking and relevance and ad matching and tools for advertisers. And a lot of the stuff is really working, and it's creating value. And that's why we're seeing a pretty sharp acceleration in the top line growth over the past several quarters. So it's a very positive story there. You know, the longer term on the AI, whether they're a winner or not, they certainly look better positioned than others. You know, Google being the core example, where it's the jury's sort of out as to what the mm-hmm. consequence of AI and interacting with all these agents might have on the search business. But for Meta, this looks like powerful technology that can enhance their value proposition without a lot of downside risk.
Yeah. Let's just note for the record, you have a buy rating and a price target of $5.55 on the stock. Let's spend the rest of our time talking about Alphabet, on which you have a hold rating. What are you looking for in its report?
Yeah, I think we're going to see stability in the search market is sort of the you know, biggest point that investors are looking for. The reads on search advertising look healthy this quarter. We're expecting a little bit of a deceleration in YouTube, and that's just coming off of a very strong NFL cycle in the fourth quarter. We've got a lot fewer games in the first quarter, so that's natural there. And you know, the questions are going to be again on spending outlook and their AI strategy. You know, if they had some product blunders, obviously well publicized on the Gemini launch. You know, investors are certainly going to be interested in management's view in correcting the course here and bringing, you know, better technology to market.
All right, Rob, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate your analysis of Meta and Google as well, or Alphabet as well. Thank you so much, Rob.
All right. Thank you, Tyler.
Well, the market may not like Meta's CapEx bump, but the move does have some implications for adjacent names. And Christina Partsenevelis is here with that part of the story. Christina.
Yeah, the bump in Meta's capital expenditure in 2024 with further increases in 2025 obviously has investors worried. You just talked about monetizing AI and how difficult that is. But this aggressive investing bodes well for many hardware names. Specifically, we can start with the obvious NVIDIA and its H100 GPU chips. Zuckerberg posted on Instagram back in January it would have roughly 350,000 H100 chips by the year end. This week also, Elon Musk said that Tesla's currently using about 3,500 H100 chips. You can see on the screen that's almost at that 40,000 mark, with plans to add another 50,000 by year end. all of that means money in Jensen Huang's pocket, the CEO of NVIDIA. And then Tesla and Meta are obviously indicative of strong demand for AI servers and hardware like server assembler Supermicro. As of Q4 last year, Meta was thought to be a 10% contributor to total revenues, this according to Wells Fargo. That's why shares are up over 4%. Then you got Arista Networks, which makes Ethernet-based AI cables, saw Meta contribute 21% of 2023 revenues. So if Meta's spending, they're going to be spending on Arista. You can see the shares are also up. And then we got to talk about Pure Storage, storage for data centers. They said they had a 10% customer in 2023. That's assumed to be Meta. And then Broadcom and Meta work very closely together on custom networking chips, so another beneficiary. And lastly, Meta promised to use AMD's new MI300X AI chip. They were discussing this at the AMD's last event, which is a competitor to NVIDIA, so that could also bode well, which is why you're seeing a sea of green on your screen. And all of these names are really just beneficiaries of Meta's deep pockets right now.
All right, a lot of spending on that infrastructure chip's a big part of it. Christina, thanks.
Thank you.
We will have a lot more coverage of today's sell-off ahead, but before we head to a quick break, let's get some show and tell, where we show you a chart and tell the story. Shares of Southwest Airlines down 9% after posting a wider than expected loss in the first quarter. CEO Bob Jordan telling Squawk on the Street earlier that the company has a lot of work to do to get back on track.
Well, we had a strong first quarter despite the financial results. We had record operating revenues, we had record passengers, record Rapid Reward member adds. But we have a number of markets in the across our network that are just not performing. So we're taking action. We're further optimizing the network. We never like to close cities. We're closing four cities. We are cutting capacity in Atlanta and Chicago O'Hare, and we're restructuring other cities and taking other actions.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back to The Exchange. Let's give you a market alert right now. The Dow at its nadir down 707 points. It has come back by about half of that to 439, or a 1.1% decline. Here's some of the movers this hour. Caterpillar, one of the biggest drags on the Dow today. The equipment manufacturer crushed Q1 earnings, but light sales sent the stock plummeting. The shares are off about 6%, 6.5% this afternoon. Victoria's Secret shares sliding after Goldman Sachs initiated coverage on the stock with a sell rating, saying it sees a tough macro and ongoing competitive pressure in the near term. For that one, shares are down nearly 4%. And on the flip side, you got your Chipotle, the fast casual chain, bucking the trend today, up 6%, topping Q1 estimates, 7% rise in same-store sales. That one just can't be stopped. It is up above $3,000 a share. Coming up, Vertiv is one of the companies that should benefit from aggressive spending on AI infrastructure. That stock is a bright spot in today's session, up 8%. The CEO joins us live and exclusively next, when The Exchange returns in 2 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. Vertiv Holdings, a maker of cooling systems for data centers, up 7% today after beating on the top and bottom lines for the first quarter. The company also revised its full-year guidance higher. Shares on a monster run over the past year, up more than 640% thanks to the AI boom. Joining us now in an exclusive on the exchange is Vertiv CEO Gio Albertazzi. Mr. Albertazzi, welcome. Good to have you with us, and congratulations on the numbers you reported yesterday. Those numbers were very strong. You're a kind of quiet player behind the scenes in this AI boom. Explain what you do and why your company is so central to what's happening in AI.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me today here. What we do is we power and cool the world's data. So behind everything we see digital, there is a data center. Indeed, there is a myriad of data center around the world where everything digital is created. We have servers. There are servers in those data centers that require power and that require cooling because they generate a lot of heat. Everything from the grid to the chip, power transmission and power distribution and power management is something that we do. The entire power train, as well as the thermal chain that manages the heat that is created. So without us, be it on the cooling or on the power side, without people like us, without us, the data center industry would not exist.
So let me ask you an elementary school question. Why is data so hot? Why does it get so hot?
That's simply because you have a lot of power going into chips and other electronic components. And that is the power needed to compute. And when chips compute and other electronic components work, that generate heat.
And are we talking about, and then another elementary school question for someone who doesn't understand this, like me, would be, okay, so you got a data center and you've got all of these hot servers there generating electricity with chips and they're generating heat. And so why can't you just throw more tonnage of HVAC into the equation, more air conditioning? I assume what you do is far, far more complex and involved than just blowing cold air into a building.
It is more complex than that, indeed. But it is the entire end-to-end cooling and thermal management. But what happened in it, what is happening with the IT change, the AI acceleration, the artificial intelligence, is a transition from traditional CPU-based servers to GPU, which have a much higher density. And that density makes them faster. It makes them faster and more suitable for AI.
Yeah.
But that generates more heat density, and it's more difficult than to extract that heat and to handle it. And that's right. Where we come to play. And everything that is then downstream from that, getting rid of that heat.
So Vertiv, you've had an incredible run, 600% gain in the stock market over the past year. Let me ask you two questions. When you hear a report like today's from Meta, or was it yesterday, saying we're going to be investing heavily in data centers, does your pulse quicken?
We have been in the data center industry doing power and thermal for multiple decades. And we are very, very close to all the big players and every player in the market. So we have a very strong and a clear view of what's going on. So clearly this part of an acceleration on the data center infrastructure investment that we very strongly participate in. And yes, when those news come out, kind of reinforce our beliefs and our view of the market.
So let me conclude with a question that I know all CEOs hate to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Revenue guidance for the year was $7.54 to $7.69 billion. That's for your fiscal year this year. How big do you think this company can be in terms of revenues in 5 years?
We have given at our last investor day in November an indication of growth between 8 to 11% in the next few years. And that's based on a certain evolution of the market that we serve and AI. So we believe that's still a very good
projection for us. Yep. And let's see what the acceleration will be.
11% over 5 years would be close to a doubling, I think, if my math is serves me right. Mr. Albertazzi, thank you so much for your time today and for explaining some concepts that this elementary school student didn't understand. Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Well, thank you very much.
We'll have you back. All right, still ahead, folks. Meta dragging down tech today. It has been the real topic du jour, shaving more than 100 points off the NASDAQ 100. Pinterest also lower. But SnapShares holding on to gains. Coming up, we'll hear from a trader who says the big tech repricing hasn't even started yet. He'll tell us where he's putting his money to work right now when the exchange returns. All right, welcome back to the exchange, everybody. Stocks lower on a double whammy of disappointing data and earnings, but paring losses right now, down just 364. That makes it kind of a down day, but a rather more routine one than we saw earlier in the day. The S&P 500 off about a half of a percent, and the NASDAQ down, I'm going to have to come over here a little bit, down 0.86%. Brianna, can you see that? Those numbers over there, I don't know what you can. Meanwhile, yields touching levels not seen since last November. The two-year back above 5% briefly, while the 10-year hovers at a little more than 4.7%. And that is raising mortgage rates as well. Coming up, we're just about 15 minutes away from the start of this year's stock draft. 9 new competitors facing off against the defending champ, the WWE superstar Charlotte Flair. This year's number one pick goes to WNBA two-time MVP Breanna Stewart. Breanna is one half of Team Money Machines. She's here with a little strategy. You're working with Karen Feinerman, a member of our team. Mm-hmm. So have you guys talked about strategy going in?
We've talked, and I'm not sharing anything.
You're not going to share anything. The history of these contests is that you've got to swing for the fences.
Yeah.
You've got to go for one that's going to really score. Last year's big one was NVIDIA.
Okay.
This year's, who knows what it
was. Yeah, we're going to go big with both of our picks.
You're going to go big with both of your mm-hmm. picks. So you have the first pick in this draft. Do you do a lot of investing on your own? You have someone who helps you with it? What do you do?
Yeah, not on my own. Definitely have a financial team that helps me, but something that I'm definitely interested in, so it's cool to be here and be on the other side of it a little bit.
We're going to have some fun. I'm really thrilled to have you here. With all that's happening in women's sports, yeah. Women's basketball, and you're a big, big part of it. Welcome to New York, by the way. You've been here. This will be your second year here. We're getting excited about the draft. The exchange will be right back. All right, welcome back. Stocks retreating from their lows after the Dow fell more than 700 points as data and earnings weigh on the indexes, but there could be more pain ahead. According to our next guest, he says the big tech repricing hasn't even transpired yet. Joining us now, Jeff Kilburg, KKM Financial founder and CEO and a CNBC contributor. Jeff, great to see you. Is today, in light of what Meta did, in light of IBM, set aside for now, Caterpillar. Is today a kind of transformational day, a day of demarcation in some sense?
I think it is, Ty. It all depends on what lens you're looking through. But when you talk about the NFL draft or your imminent stock draft, there's more than one round in any of these drafts. So I think we are just in the first round, and there's 7 rounds in the NFL draft. So if you look at NVIDIA or Meta, for example, I think you have to understand the actual exposure. There's 484 different ETFs that own NVIDIA, Von Eck, VTI, as well as SMH. They have over 200 million shares of NVIDIA just in those two ETFs. So I think it's fascinating that we had 3 weeks of turbulence, 3 weeks of volatility. And remember, the VIX is under 20, so there hasn't been any panic in the market. But when you do see some rebalancing here, Ty, and you see some gaps on the chart back and fill, which I think is going to happen in NVIDIA down to 680 and even down to 400 in Meta, I think that's the repricing I'm talking about. Because in the bigger picture, I'm coming up for air. Hold on. When the bigger picture, we're seeing the S&P 500, Ty, only down a little over 4%, and you saw that bounce once again today.
All right, let's talk about the fact that you've got some improvement in the major indexes over the last couple of hours. Does that tell you anything?
It does. It speaks to the volumes that there's so much cash on the sideline. But one thing it doesn't tell me is that these rates, the 10-year note, you know, I go back to my bond leadership where I cut my teeth in the business trading 30-year and 10-year futures in Chicago. The fact of the matter, the 10-year note at 4.7%, there's been a lag effect. There's almost been a dislocation. So I think this bounce back could be a little misguided due to the fact that we're just moving money. It's almost like an accounting ledger. Oh, Facebook is going to spend $5 billion more on AI. All that goes into chips purchases. You know, and I know that's not true. There's people involved. There's buildings involved. There's a variety of different expenses that go into that CapEx for Facebook or Meta on this extra $5 billion. So I think when you see Intel up 1.5%, AMD up 1.5%, of course, NVIDIA, the big winner, I think this is an opportunity to put some more protection. I own puts. And at some moment in time here, as we get further down, I will be selling puts to add to exposure. But right here, right now, I'm a little apprehensive, and I'm using the bond market to give me that apprehension.
Yeah, I guess what I would say here is what looked like it could have been not a catastrophic day.
A disaster.
It looked like now it's looking really rather more like a pretty routine run-of-the-mill day where the market has... Go ahead.
That's right, Ty. We're conditioned to that. We buy this dip. And I think going back to the last 10 years, we've been conditioned to buy the dip. But I think it's very normal. You see a 10% correction every year or so. You see 3 or 4 or 5% corrections. So I think this correction is just in the process. It's only been 3 weeks. But the way we look at markets, everything is so exaggerated. The reaction to Facebook, exaggerated. The movement higher in the last 5 months, S&P 500 being up 25%, exaggerated. So I think we have to be calm, resolute, but understand that the market has the ability to move lower as the VIX potentially goes above 25.
So we would wish you were here today because I know some people you know or admire here. Eddie George, a great running back.
He's the best.
Nashville.
TSU.
Great guy. And Austin Eckler of the NFL with the Commanders will join us for the stock draft, which is going to kick off right after this. Jeff Kilburg, thanks very much.
Awesome. See you, Ty.
All right, that does it for The Exchange. The stock draft is up next. You know the music. That can mean only one thing. Melissa Lee making the annual appearance for the stock draft. We'll be ready to go. Brianna Stewart's got the first pick. She's almost on the clock. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome to what we immodestly call the best day of the year on CNBC. It is our stock draft day. I'm Tyler Matheson, gladly joined by Melissa Lee. Welcome back. Good
glad
to have you in the house.
Here.
And we're thrilled to have our teams back in the building with us.
We are seeing a strong sell-off today. We are well off the session lows. The Dow is right now down by 0.8%. The S&P 500 is down by less than 1%. And we see a number of sectors trying to make their comebacks, including information technology, as well as materials and utilities.
But this type of market action, by the way, is exactly what stock pickers kind of look for. A little bit of a blow off, a retreat in prices, getting some high value names maybe at a cheaper price than they've been in recent times. That's exactly what we're going to do today. Our participants have done their research, picked their names, and Tim Seymour will be here to help us break down the stocks. Four of our competitors are also in the studio, starting with the defending champion and WWE superstar Charlotte Flair, the WNBA MVP Brianna Stewart is here and getting some stock picking assistance from Fast Money trader Karen Feinerman. Neve Schulman of MTV's Catfish is here, along with former NFL running back and star Heisman winner Eddie George. And joining us remotely, another great running back, Austin Eckler, now with the Washington Commanders, the team I grew up with. Kenny the Jet Smith from inside the NBA, as well as the mentalist Oz Perlman. There's hot dog eating champ Joey Chestnut. He eats more hot dogs in one sitting than Jillian Michaels has eaten in her entire life. We're excited to have Jillian as part of our draft as well, and a lot of excitement surrounding this next contestant and comedian, Drewski. It's Take Your Kids to Work Day, and we've got many young CNBC fans here, and they love Drewski.
And as we mentioned with us here on set, for the entire show to help us break down the top picks here, Tim Seymour. But Tim, before we can draft, we've got to set the stage here because the markets are having a big down day, weak GDP, big drop for Meta. So 1-2 punch here for the markets.
Yeah, and a combination of that along with higher rates, which at some point we said are going to be, there's that day when equities respond. I think we are in the middle of the busiest part of earnings season. We have the most important companies in terms of market cap, in terms of the leadership they've meant to this market. And last night, certainly Meta didn't do them solid. And if you think about what we have coming tonight, Microsoft arguably is really the one that I think sets the tone, is kind of that balance across AI, obviously software, and the broader tech space.
Yeah, and Microsoft and Alphabet, which are going to report tonight, they are down and they are still trying to come off their session lows, but they're still down. And so what do you think we're going to be looking for tonight as we look at those, as they are also on the board for being picked?
Well, it's fascinating how investors are thinking about this sector now. And in a time of rising environment, sometimes mega cap tech is defensive. You're getting decent growth. Certainly in Google's case or Alphabet's case, you're getting it at a reasonable price. I think in the case of Microsoft, this has certainly been one of the front runners in the AI space in terms of those that are really benefiting now. Obviously, Microsoft, in terms of Azure and as goes Azure and the growth side of that business, I think is going to set the tone for tonight.
All right, let's get to the draft, shall we?
Yes.
Before we begin, though, we want to get over to Dom Chu for a quick reminder of how this whole thing works. Dom.
All right, so Melissa, Ty, Tim, the draft will consist of 10 teams picking a total of two stocks over two different rounds. Now, there are 60 assets on the board. That is 57 stocks alongside three interesting plays, commodity-wise. You've got oil, gold, and Bitcoin as well. Maybe you want to take your big tech staples like Meta or Apple or Microsoft. Many of those names very much, again, in play. Now, if AI is your game, we're not talking Allen Iverson, we're talking artificial intelligence. NVIDIA had a huge gain over the past couple of years, but who knows if it's got any more room to run. Or if you want something with a little bit more risk, maybe a recent hot IPO like Reddit. Those shares up, you know, 20% or so, but they've been volatile. Whatever they choose, though, the team will be the best average appreciation, that's their performance, between closing today and the Friday, right before next year's Super Bowl on February 7th, 2025. That contestant will be crowned the 2024 Stock Draft Champion. So, Ty, Melissa, Tim, that's the state of play, the rules of engagement. I'll send things back over to you.
You've been listening to The Exchange. Make sure you're subscribed to get each episode every day, same time, same place.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.